Leancast, product innovation and UX design with Bonanza Design.
Hello, hello. So super excited to have you all here. Let me just like give you a bit of a rundown what you can expect. I'll explain a bit about what I do, who am I, why you should be listening to me. So you can get a bit of a background about myself. I have a mechanical engineering background, right? Then I moved in to Sweden to do my master in sustainability, design thinking and innovation, right? And then in 2012, I moved into Berlin and I look around, a startup, Berlin startup scene was growing. And I was wondering what I can do and looked around and I was like, the closest title to what I learned is UX design. So I self-taught myself UX design and I've been doing UX design, design thinking and innovation from 2012. As a UX designer, I had to work as a unicorn designer in agile teams. Being the only designer, I had to wear many hats. I had to work under really, really brutal, tight deadlines. So what you have been given as inputs makes sense to me. I resonate with that and I had to deal with it. I had to work for several startups for over 6 years, and I only work under agile development. So as a UX designer, I bump into some of your frustration. So that's who I am. These days, I'm running a design agency called Bonanza Design. We are based in Berlin. We follow sprints. When we were designing our processes, I was given agile development, agile environment. That was the only environment I did work. So the processes that we design for our own packages and products are heavily inspired by agile sprints. So we offer two packages, Lean Innovation, for early stage product validation. It's a 4+1 week sprint. And we also offer app and UX design sprint, which is typically a five week sprint. So you can sort of trace how the agile mentality, methodologies shape the way I run my business. Now we are a team of 12 people, running five projects at the same time. We've been around for the past 16 months, and we went from a team of 2 to 12 in this short period of time. So this is about who I am, what I do. Without further ado, let's jump into the core of this conversation. What's the difference between waterfall and agile? Do we understand the difference between waterfall and agile? Do you have an understanding? Because this is very key. The idea of waterfall, so waterfall was the common practice before agile. Waterfall, let's be a bit philosophic here. Waterfall is a statement, is when we follow a waterfall approach, we are confident that we can predict the outcomes of next year now, right? That's why I use the linear process. We believe that we can predict what's going to happen next year. A proud product owner on October 2019, they're like, I know what I'm going to build for November 2020. I can predict it, right? Who would have thought there is a corona pandemic is going to happen? That's a big problem with waterfall, right? waterfall, we say, we know what's going to happen. Let's get all the requirements. Let's design it. Let's develop it. Let's test it, deploy it, and maintain it, right? So it's a very, very simplified take on reality. So what happens is, like, we go through this process, this massive process, takes year, sometimes 2 years. Do you remember Windows? You have to wait for a year for the new Windows to come out. The Windows 90, what was it? Windows 94 or something. So the problem with this is that you wait for 2 years, you ship it, and all of a sudden you realize no one wants it. So that's a huge, huge, huge cost, huge risk. So you're like, wait, this is stupid. Let's not do that. Then we talked about agile. And this is important that in waterfall, in my way of describing waterfall, we were thinking about circle, and we get circle at the end, right? But in agile, we are not necessarily have to abide by our initial vision. We might be thinking about a circle, we might end up with a triangle as outcome, as the output. Why? Because the whole mantra of agile philosophy, so to speak, is be responsive to changes. That's why the line that you're seeing is very zigzag. That's why the output is completely different from the vision in your initial vision, right? And Carlos had a really great point too. We look at this madness of waterfall that you basically put together a massive, massive backlog roadmap, product roadmap, and you want to ship it in 2 years. We were like, why do we want to do this? Why do we not break the deliverables into small chunks, small manageable chunks? And in each sprint, we try to deliver a set of core feature that could really drive business outcome and help our customers to do better. So we try to be more flexible, more responsive to market changes, because that's essentially what we need to be playing at. We need to always be respective of technological changes, cultural changes, and market changes, right? And we need to factor in these changes into our basically backlog. So that's basically the in a nutshell the difference between waterfall and agile. And I broke it down a bit because I'm going to get back to a waterfall later on in my talk and tell you why some of you already, although it's branded, your process is branded as agile, you are still working under waterfall mentality. How many of you are familiar with such a process? Most of you, how many of you are working under Scrum, and how many of you are working under Kanban? So that's a typical process of a Scrum process, right? And it's really important. Let's break down the component. You got yourself a product backlog. You need to do sprint planning. It always has to happen in the first few days of the sprint, if not before. Then you have 1 to 4 weeks of sprinting. You finish the work. Review, reflection, retrospective, and then your insight must hopefully feed the backlog. So that's basically a typical Scrum process. So let's talk about your biggest issues with the agile product development process as a designer. What are the typical frustrations you have in the chat? Let's just survey again. Why this is difficult for designers to work under this tempo? Lose of focus from product owner. False metrics based off developer task completion on a hard to plan research ahead of dev sprint perfectly. It's nearly impossible to understand user requirements, come up with a solution, and test it with actual users. One of the biggest problems here is that the Scrum process is not designed for the designers. It's designed for the tech to deliver, right? Now we realize that, hey, we have to squeeze in the work of designers into our process because we need icons, we need like interfaces, design, and what have you. So always UX design sort of like the unwanted child, so to speak, in the family, right? In this process. Iteration should be done on design and prototype level before develop. Absolutely, Paolo. And we need to talk about it. So this typical process of Scrum that we are seeing is mostly reflecting on the delivery side of product development and doesn't really address the needs for discovery. So, and that's what is the frustration of so many of you. In a proper product development process, we have to differentiate the work of discovery from the work of delivery. What I show you in the previously, to me, is only delivery. You are delivering what you researched previously in your discovery sprint. The teams that suffer from not having enough time to research, to test, to validate their ideas, probably is not recognizing your organization that there is a need for an act of discovery. When we want to discover, what do we want to discover? We want to systematically learn from what we have shipped in the previous sprints, learn about new changes in our customer behaviors, new trends, market trends, technological trends, sometimes social and cultural trends. And we want to learn from them. And in case there is actionable insights in the form of creating new product ideas, we want to include it into our backlog. How many of you in your organization have differentiated the work of discovery from the work of delivery? The way we suggest to the clients is that the act of discovery needs to be a continuous iterative process. And we have an allocated productario team, a team of developer, designer, and managers that doing the act of discovery independent from the work of delivery. Product development has two major parts: discovery, delivery. There is a lot of inputs I want to read before moving forward. So when you are frustrated that, hey, I really do not have time to go around and around in this tight time frame for in our sprints to do research, proper research, and my product owner tell me, hey, build this, that's enough. I've done my research and I don't know. And I ask the product owner to offer me your research insights. And there is no such thing as your research insights. Is because you want to do the job of discovery and delivery in one sprint. And that doesn't really work. And you need to respect the art of discovery, the science of discovery, and you need to have a team for it. It really depends on, this is the nitty-gritty of the foundation of the teams, but the way I would love to have that is that not if we have three UX designers in our team, periodically each UX designer does discovery, then go to the delivery and back to discovery and go to delivery. So this way they can basically shift gears and not only doing delivery and pixel pushing and sometimes go to the discovery and research and actually try to test ideas. But in every given sprint, we need to have a dedicated team to do discovery, right? And it should not be sacrificed because we have to push and deliver. Let's not do discovery this sprint. No, it has to be included in every sprint. So we established that product delivery is only half of an agile product development. Why? Because I always like to refer to this quote, right? We have to recognize the importance of understanding customer problems, understanding business KPIs that actually going to drive our business forward. And we need to invest time into researching and understanding the opportunities in its very details. And I firmly believe in this quote that if we only focus on delivery and push, and not really understanding why we are doing what we are doing, we are going to fail. We are going to get into the build trap. Build trap is, how would you define the build trap? So build trap is basically, for me, the way I would like to see it, build trap is basically a waterfall in disguise. How do I define waterfall in disguise? When you're not listening to market signals, to your customer pain points, when you are not continuously doing research, when you are distancing yourself, removing yourself, when you don't have a bridge between market signals, customer pain points, and your product team, you fall back on waterfall mode. And waterfall mode, in essence, it means that I know everything, I can predict future, hence we have to build this future and this future and this future, right? That's a sense of waterfall. Overconfidence about what we know and not respecting the reality that is changing in every millisecond, right? And when you trapped in building and building and building, then your UX designers, your design team get squeezed in and in and in more and more and more and more because they have to deliver more and more and more and more because the product owners, the head of product, the way their success is being measured by how many future they have shipped in this sprint, in the next sprint, in the previous sprint. So the output, how many future we have built, becomes the KPI and we forget the outcome. Has what we have shipped driven business outcome, revenue? Has what we have shipped made a good impact, positive impact in the way our customers and users do their businesses? Future factory, that's a build trap. That's waterfall in disguise for me. Quantity over quality. So let's recap. What have we established so far? We talk about the difference between waterfall and agile. And I wanted to break it down for you because in the build trap, I talk about why some of the agile processes that we are running is actually waterfall in disguise. We talk about a typical Scrum product delivery process and why so many of us designers feel no room, no place in this process because we cannot really do our jobs. We cannot go through a typical cycle of research and discovery, defining and prioritization, ideation, prototyping, testing, iterating. right? And because it's impossible to do all of this in a sprint that you are meant to deliver, right? Hence, we have to, and this is very old topic. Big companies already have separated their discovery from their delivery. It's too late. I mean, if you haven't done it, like Netflix, all these giants, they have discovery teams and they have delivery teams, right? And this topic that I'm talking to you, it's already outdated. It's just 5 years ago, the whole differentiation between discovery and delivery. We have to catch up. Europe needs to catch up with this. These are bread and butter in big organizations. We also talk about bill trap. What is bill trap? When your PO, when your CTO is falling in love with shipping than creating outcomes. So I think that's clear. So I would like to survey how many of you, based on what I broke down for you, experience bill trap right now or just experienced it in some months ago and some years ago? How many of you are dealing with this? Can you recognize these patterns? Are you just shipping and shipping and shipping without knowing what you're doing? So disadvantage of bill trap, when you get locked into bill trap, you won't have any time for proper research and validation of the ideas. Forget the user research. User research you would do only for biggest project that you want to push. There is no systematic user research, so to speak. So this disadvantage of bill trap. There is going to be a huge pressure on you to deliver, and you feel like you're not doing your part because most of what you do as a UX designer is research, validation, and test. In 2022, the focus is more on testing and validation before pushing any pixel. That's what it's called lean innovation. So we want to, because now in 2022, actually, if we ask a designer to design for 3 weeks, that's costly for us. So we want to make sure that when we ask a designer to design, we are designing the right thing. So that's why the value of design and research is becoming increasingly more important. Looking at cheap MVPs to test our ideas first and foremost, with as less coding and pixels pushed or written, then we coming to the act of design and coding. So how can you avoid bill trap? Two things that you need to do, at least in my experience. You need to have a specific outcome in mind. If your product team do not pushing for any outcome, do not have a recognition of outcome, then you are going to push outputs, futures. Second is that you need to have a specific process for discovery. You need to evangelize it, and you need to incorporate it into your agile product development process. Clear vision. A clear vision for your product efforts, clear product strategies, and product outcomes. So let's break down these two. I think these are really important. What is an outcome, you may ask? Outcome is twofold. When you think about an outcome, you think about the change in your customer behavior, which at the same time drives business KPIs. And the most important KPI of all time is revenue. More revenue. So that's how we define outcome. So let's talk about what is not outcome. Increasing number of products in a shop is an output. increasing number of people who purchase our products is an outcome. Can we discuss the difference between these two examples? What's the difference here? Subtle, but important. So when we think about output, a typical e-commerce product owner says like, okay, so a product owner, an e-commerce product owner, look at the product inventory, sees like there is 200 products, but the sales is stagnated. And then he or she thinks about the great ideas. Let's bring in 50 new products. Let's increase our inventory. That's an output-driven mentality. That's a decision deprived of research. Because the same product owner could look into their Salesforce and business reports and realize that, wait a minute, only 16 of our products bringing about 70% of our revenue. So instead of increasing the number of products, new products brings new complexities. You have to target a new set of group. You have to target a new group of people. You have to look at different side of the market. You have to conduct different research campaign for each product that you introduce. So the smart product owner says like, hold on a second. Only 16 of our products brings about 70% of our revenue. Why do we want to introduce new products? Why do we not double down on these 16 products and make sure more people of the same characteristics of our current customers get to see these products? So that's outcome mentality. That says like, instead of increasing number of products, how can we increase the number of people that buys our products? You see the difference? You could ask Amanda, if you have tapped into the entire market, your entire direct market, for example, if you're pushing a retail product in Germany, your direct market can be millions. Have you reached all of them? Have you exhausted all your channels that you can reach your customers? Yes or no? If that your direct market is exhausted, what are the neighboring markets you can tap into? How can we avoid bill trap? We need to promote an outcome mindset in our organization that, hey, what we have to do on the product side should first and foremost bring impact to the lives of our customers. At the same time, pushing our business KPIs. That's the first thing that we need to do for every product initiatives, for every item that we have in our product backlog. We need to ask ourselves, what is the outcome that we would like to get out of these product initiatives? Do we have a definition of it? How can we define that? Second is having a specific process for product discovery. Amanda, my question here is like, have you tapped into all the million kits that is in your direct market? It's communicating your product offerings to a million of people is not easy. And not at every given point, all the million people would have direct urgent need to respond to your marketings. Cool. So have a specific process for discovery, right? So what does it look like? How does it feel like? First of all, when we talk about product discovery, we need to understand the role of product trio. A product discovery team is responsible for doing continuous research, identifying opportunities, validating opportunities, using MVP experiments, right? When you validate an opportunity, then you need to validate the solution by prototyping and user testing. And that's the act of product discovery. And that is why it's so difficult to squeeze it in into a 1 to 4 week product delivery sprint, especially for product teams that they have one UX designers, that person cannot do the delivery and discovery at the same time, right? So let's talk about each of these pillars. How do we do research? What are the tools in your toolbox when you are committing to do continuous research? What do you do? When we talk about research, we need to identify, we need to have an understanding of our tools in our toolbox. Regardless of the tool that you're using, it's either qualitative surveys, you're looking to trends, doing customer interviews, shadowing your customers, doing user testings. Your research methods are divided into qualitative and quantitative. When we do quantitative, we want to know what is happening. We look into our analytics and monitor and study the behavior of 1,000 users, and we realize that in the second phase of our onboarding, we have huge dropouts. That is quantitative. We know that what is happening. Huge dropout in the second phase. But we don't understand the context. We don't know why is it happening. We don't get to establish empathy with our current users. We lack that. We cannot get those insights from the analytics, from the surveys. Then we have to change gears and use our qualitative methods to understand the whys, the context, the feelings, the frustrations, the thinkings that goes into each mind of our users, right? So when we talk about continuous research, when you're designing a continuous research process for your team, you need to be aware that you cannot do all the time qualitative. You cannot do all the time quantitative. You need to shift gear all the time, because when you focus too much on qualitative, you get insights, but you are not sure whether those insights that you got from 10 interviews would resonate to a wider audience that you have, say 100,000 other users that you have. So in this dance between qualitative and quantitative, you get to know the whys, the insights from the user interviews, and you validate it at scale with your wider audience, right? So that's a game you play as a UX researcher, shifting gears between qualitative to quantitative. Hey, I had the interview on Monday with one of our customers, and they told me that we drop out from the second phase because they ask us about a certain private information that we did not feel comfortable. Oh, that's a great insight. Let me run a survey. Let me run a test to see whether that's valid for wider audience. Then you use quantitative method to validate that insight with the wider audience. Right? Are we clear to the research part? Qualitative, quantitative. It's a dance. You go back and forth. Then you realize that after conducting your research, you realize that there are certain opportunities. We conducted 5 initial interviews with parents, and we realized that they are worried about their kids, especially after corona pandemic, that everyone is online. They are worried about their kids getting hacked online. They are worried about cyber threats. That's a big insight. Then we run a survey and ask 10,000 or more parents, and they confirm the same concern too. At this point, you can call that an opportunity, a potential that you could work on further. We conducted several rounds of customer interviews, user interviews, and we realized that for parents with kids, cyber threat is a big concern. We run a survey and we expose that to 10,000 parents, and we got the same concern from them too. So that's an opportunity. That's something that we need to test with wider audience. Then to validate an opportunity, we use MVP experiments. How many of you are familiar with the topic of MVPs? What is an MVP? So we realize that cyber threat is a big topic for parents with kids, right? It's an opportunity, but we don't want to build it. It's costly, and we don't know what to offer to them, right? So, but we want to test the opportunity. Amanda, it really depends on your audience. If it's a B2B, you cannot use Google Survey. You have to use private platforms. For retail, you can use Google Survey. So MVP, first of all, let's establish, is not the first version of your running product. Let's establish that. MVP is all the cheap experiments that you can get access to fake the first version of your product. That's an MVP. Let me establish it. MVP, it can be your first version of your product, but that's an expensive one. MVPs must be cheap. MVPs must be the cheapest way that you can simulate the first version of your product or the first versions of your product, right? What are the typical MVP experiments? Fake door test for running application, especially if you want to test new features, you can use placeholder in your running application. For example, if you want to test a language switcher, you can place it there. A link doesn't do anything. As soon as you click on it, you can see this overlay. Right? So fake door tests are great for running application. You place something in your application, it doesn't work, it's a placeholder. As soon as you click on it, it shows overlay. Sorry, not now, but we just wanted to test. Wizard of Oz. So if you want to create an automatic self-ticketing system, the first version of product will cost you a lot of money. How can you test that? Just use a human, fake it. We can get a body of metal and a human. We can use it. That's a Wizard of Oz. That's fantastic for testing new product ideas that are expensive to build. You want to test the product experience. You want to test the value proposition. When we talk about the new opportunity like cyber threat for parents with kids, you want to ideate a number of potential products for that opportunity, and you want to test it with cheapest experiment possible. Another concierge service. especially for service-based platforms that you want to push a new service or you want to improve your service, instead of automating, because at every given point, you need to automate your service and scale it to many, many customers, right? But before scaling it and automating it, you can pick up the phone, you can manually conduct that service experience for your potential customers and see how that feels like, see what kind of feedback you're getting. So if you want to scale a personal coaching application, your first version of your product, your MVP, should be you basically coaching people or making sure they keep up with their habits and stuff, right? Personally, you have to, when I was working at the factory in Berlin, there was a actually habit tracking startup, and there were a team of three founders. Each of them had, they shared a task. Each of them would catch up with 10 of their customers, for example, and they would just like had a calendar, they would call them, they would have periodic conversation with them. So in the beginning, they did not have any automation. They did not have any technology, like digital products to help them to automate and reduce their manual work. So that's concierge service. And the most typical and famous experiment is landing page, right? For the example that I showcased with you, like cyber threats for parents and families, it's an opportunity. We go into a fast ideation process, come up with a number of core value proposition, frame it as a product offering, put it in a landing page, and expose it to a wider audience and see whether there is attention around the product offering and there is commitment. So we always want to validate for commitment and attention at the same time. So these are the ways that you want to first validate your opportunity that there is a need, there is a potential for this opportunity in the market. We can work on it further, right? For example, in the example of the cyber threats, if you think that when you run a landing page that says that we cover all of your kids' activities, it's an insurance product, regardless of whether they are using a tablet, iPhone, laptop, or watch, we cover it all. So in case something bad happened to them, they're covered by our insurance product. And when you expose it, for example, to 10,000 in your market, in your direct market, and you realize that actually we're getting really good conversion out of this, people are already signing up for the product to learn more, and they cannot wait to have this product insurance, then that's a great signal for you to move further and design the solution in detail. For an insurance product, the solution designs are twofold. You need to design that policy. That's part of your product. What does that policy entails? What are the terms and commitments? Is it a 12 months insurance? Is it a 6 months insurance? What we cover, that's part of a product. Another aspect of the product can be the digital aspect of it. You may decide that, okay, we want to have a direct link to our customers through a digital platform, right? So for those opportunities, for those products that there is an interface side, then you need to do prototyping and user testing. When do we do prototyping and user testing? When we validate the product offering, when we see that there is enough market gravity around that product offering, then in the solution validation, we try to design the solution, prototype it, and test it. One of the great ways to validate solution is design sprints. Design sprints are great for solution validation. So when you want to validate solutions, not the product offering, not the opportunity, but the solution, you have to always make sure that there is opportunity, that opportunity is valid and viable to your market. There is already, you already have 10,000 signups. Then you jump into the solution validation and try to design that product in details. You need to design all the policies. You need to design that the type of interaction that you are having with your customers and users. You need to design that experience, user experience. And you always want to start with design sprints, because design sprints are great ways to iterate on the core solution architect, the core architect of your solution. For example, when you are designing, for an HR platform, like recruiting platform, the core experience is at the customer profile, the recruiting funnel. So when you're designing a recruiting platform for recruiters, recruiters want to access to the customer database, customer profile, and they want to have a sales funnel. So these are the core experience of a recruiting platform, right? So design sprints allows you to focus on those core components of the solution, iterate on it as a team to get the buy-in of all the team. And then when you validate the solution, validate the core components of the solution, then you need to do a detailed UX design. Why are we doing this? So we realize that the typical agile process doesn't allow for UX designers to do their job. Everything is squeezed in. We are building because we don't spend enough time to understand the problems, to realize opportunities. We don't do any discovery work. We don't learn, we just build, so to speak. Right? So, and then we get trapped in build trap. And we were like, okay, how can we avoid this? First, we need to integrate an outcome mentality into our product development efforts. We need to look into creating change in human behavior first and foremost, rather than shipping and increasing the number of products that we have in our e-commerce or adding more features that no one wants, right? So we have to avoid this. Then the second is that we need to recognize and respect a specific process for discovery, for the act of discovery. And how do we do this? First of all, for your product discovery team, you need to have we need to have at least a PM, UX, and a tech lead or a tech dev. Without this trio, what you are doing here is going to be problematic. A discovery sprint is an ongoing and goes in tandem with your delivery sprint. So basically, what you are doing in the discovery will feed your product backlog, right? And get prioritized for delivery. There are different product backlogs. Everyone does it differently. There is this one. What I love the most, Opportunity Map by Teresa Torres. If you haven't read her book, please read her book. It's absolutely a great book. Continuous Discovery Habits. And I think if you are in the work of product discovery, product development, UX design, this is a really great book for you to jump on, right? So what we are doing in our discovery will feed our opportunity map. And in the opportunity map, let's break it down a bit for you. As you can see on the top, first thing that Teresa Torres does, which is brilliant, is that whatever that we are doing as our product efforts need to lead to a desired outcome, a change in customer behavior plus driving our business KPIs, right? So that's how she create an opportunity map. For her, opportunity map replaces product backlog. And then you have opportunities, like, for example, cyber threat is an opportunity. And then you have solutions. Solution would be, for example, an insurance product. And you need to test all, and for every opportunity, there can be multiple solutions. This could be cyber threat for example, parents and family. This could be for governmental bodies, another opportunity. B2Bs, another opportunity. For every target group, there is an opportunity to serve some of your target groups. And for each of these opportunities, there can be multiple products, solutions, right? And the experiment that you're running is basically, it could be design sprints. It could be any of the other experiments type that I mentioned to you, right? So this is a really fantastic way to organize all the insights from your discovery of efforts here, and all the learnings that you get from agile, your delivery phase. So when you go through the sprint planning, scrumming, and then reviewing, what you review and what you learn as customer feedback will feed back to your opportunity map. So your opportunity map becomes a living, breathing piece of document that capture all the opportunities and insights from your discovery and from your delivery. Do we submit the research finding, the user research result to clients? How to present such? Yes, 100%. So we present all of our work to the clients almost in Figma, right? So whatever we do when it comes to research, it will happen on Figma. Of course, when it comes to detailed recordings, and we have a Google Drive, but most of our work are initiated in Figma, ended in Figma, right? So, and usually the way we work is we work very collaboratively. So our client is always with us while we are working. Right, so that's how we deliver. But when the way we do present our research, there is insights, and then we do affinity diagramming and gather all the insight from each interviews, and we organize it like this. It's a lot of work. This is a very, very solid process of that include all the proper research that you need to look, you need to do for a proper early stage product validation. But if you have a running product, what you could do, I think selling 4 weeks is difficult for you, but you can sell 2 weeks, right? First of all, Joel, you need to understand that how many UX designers you have and how many devs you have. So the ratio needs to be all right. If you have 20 developers and two UX designers, you cannot do anything about this. You need to, first of all, create a balance between the number of UX designers you have and number of devs you have. Because the more devs you have, the more initiatives are getting coded, and the more design needs to be designed and pixels needs to be pushed. So first of all, you need to first evangelize for having more UX designers in the team first. Then you can break your discovery into, so first of all, one thing that you, instead of a 4-week sprint, you can at least start with a 2-week sprint, right? I think that's something you can start, right? And you can have, you could have, especially for running applications, you could have a week of solution validation and a week of continuous research. But what I argue here is that your research, so the way I did it here is a bit like, okay, I need to do discovery, then I do delivery. But in reality, these are engines that run in tandem. Right? So this is basically, they are running in tandem. There is no contradiction. So in certain sprints, for example, Amanda, Dominic, and Joel, it's our product trio for this sprint. So we would need a product trio for our discovery, right? So Amanda, Dominic, and Joel are PM UX tech lead of this sprint product discovery. Right. So, and they are, their task is to go through this process of research, opportunity validation, and solution validation. Right. And this can happen in tandem. And then next sprint, then we switch the product trio, and the product trio will be Harry, Storm, and Alan, right? So that's what we recommend to the clients. The act of continuous research needs to happen as a UX designer, that as a UX design team in your organization, you need to automate research in your organization, that you know that every Tuesday and Thursday there will be customer interviews and user testings, right? Organization, big organization, have automated the act of continuous research. They have a funnel. So for example, as soon as someone gets signed up into the application, they receive an invitation for customer interviews or user interviews. So you need to have trigger in your applications for different events. You have to have triggers that encourage your customers and users to come and have a conversation with us. And hopefully this system will allows you to automatically, so for interviews to get booked automatically for your design team. That's fantastic. So if you do that, right? So and then, you know, this is not something radical, to be honest. Major companies are having a specifically an exclusive product discovery team. That product discovery team could be fixed or could be floating and changing sprint by sprint, but the act of continuous research remains valid all the time. You need to conduct discovery in tandem with delivery. So people, designers that are in the delivery phase, they know that we have to deliver because there is a dedicated team doing the discovery. And they know that at some point they can switch gears and join the discovery team. You got something out of this. Don't get trapped into build trap. promote and evangelize for a discovery process in your organization. It needs to be systematic. In case you want to learn a lot more about this, read this book, Nowhere Near the Experience of Teresa Torres. She is an amazing product evangelist. Read this book, please. That's going to help you a lot. A lot of these topics that I talked about, she goes really deep. I've read this book twice already, FYI. We will continue evolving this content as we move along. Thank you a lot, team. Have a lovely evening, and I'm out.